Hello, hello. This is Kinnack coming back for the February 2019 podcast. Sneaking in just under the wire because it is still February for the moment. Have a whole bunch of stuff to talk about in addition to a bunch of questions. February's been a very interesting month at the Kinnack household. So if you follow the Patreon, in which case I thank you a great deal because you guys have really been keeping things afloat and I think moving in a really good direction these past few months. But if you've been following that, you might have caught that I fell rock climbing and screwed up my ankle, which is not the end of the world. It is basically better now, but if you remember reading that, you might remember it was like 6 weeks ago. So that's been a fun chunk of several months, along with January being awful, as January's want to be, and not being able to really leave the house because of ankle issues, sort of piling on top of that cabin fever. Good news is there were no, like, I don't know, murders and cannibalism or anything. I'm not actually sure what goes on in the movie Cabin Fever. I'm assuming murders and cannibalism. Really, if you have a movie named Cabin Fever and it doesn't involve Wendigos, I think you've made a terrible mistake. But the other thing that is going on is that, Liz accepted a job out in Seattle, really accepted a promotion that takes her out to Seattle. So we'll be moving out to Redmond in, oh, about 2 months, a little less than 2 months. So that's going to be exciting. I do plan to continue doing Metroplexity stuff, at least to the extent that I am right now. Some of the Patreon goals might move around a little bit due to cost of living differences. But that's probably the extent of stuff that you guys will see. There will If you can hear the yowling in the background, that is my cat Zoe. She has caught a cat and a mouse. And would like to be praised for having caught it, but unfortunately, she is deaf. It's gone deaf over the last year or so, and she can no longer hear me praise her. But she is a fierce huntress, and she is very good at bringing me catnip mice to make sure that I can feed myself. She, but so yeah, we're moving out to Redmond. So there will be some amount of disruption during the move itself, because there's like a week where we're driving across the country, and like a couple weeks before that when we're going to be packing up to do that, and moving into the new place. Oh, really cool news though, totally related to Metroplexity. Guess who's moving along with us? Puyo will be joining us in the Wild Northwest. So that'll be cool. It will, we're actually going to be roommates. So art requests might very easily be, hey Puyo, can you draw me this horrible tentacle thing with, I don't know, too many eyes and mouths where they don't belong? It's like, yep. And then I will have horrible things to scar you all with. So yeah, it's good. Lots of very sudden stuff though. And the house that we've been working on remodeling so that we can move into it and live there is almost assuredly going to become an Airbnb. And we will be living there for like 2 to 3 weeks maybe before we leave. So yeah, that'll be just comical in a lot of ways. But yeah, Liz will be. I know everyone at her company is very excited to have her out there. And we have sort of a, through them, we have sort of a network, to land there. So that'll be really nice. So yeah, that's, you know, month in the life of Kinnack. It has been, a little excessive, to be perfectly honest. Oh, I forgot to give the, now traditional, I'm sorry if things are weird with this AV setup. It's sort of cobbled together for, like, what I can walk to with a gimpy ankle and when I can do it that doesn't annoy Liz. So she is actually downstairs doing early music stuff. I'm not sure if I've probably mentioned that at least briefly before. There's... I'll actually try and see if they have, like, audio that you can listen to on the website. Looks like they might. So if you go to theearlyinterval.com, they might have music that you can listen to. I'm not actually sure. But, yeah, there's a nice picture of Liz and her music cohorts, which unfortunately she is also moving away from. So they're downstairs rehearsing for probably the last concert that she'll be doing with them, which is a thing. And she's been working on the new edition of Pathfinder, which is a game that I talk about not infrequently here, that Liz works on professionally, and I do some writing sort of on the side. I guess also professional, but she's, like, you know, contracted, doing, like, 40 hours a week type stuff. So, yeah, just a lot going on her end, too. I really apologize if you can hear Zoe yowling, because it's pretty piercing up here, but I just don't have the heart to be angry at her. And even if I was, she wouldn't realize what's going on. Okay, so we've got a bunch of questions that I'm going to jump into. First batch is Penguin Pyre. I've been systematically spading Cyberware for 2 months now, mostly using a broad variety of combat techniques and playing around with thematically appropriate NPCs. How much are we missing from Cyberware in general, and am I on the right track, or should I take a different track? That, in general, is a really good approach, both with Cyberware and with equipment and stuff in general. So, yeah. I would say there's still, I think, a couple of little bits that haven't been discovered. Like, there might be a technique or two missing, basically. But nothing monstrous. I haven't been following super closely, because this month, as you can imagine from the last chunk there, has been a little crazy. But, yeah, it's... probably, it seems to be going along pretty well. Except for the Omni Eyes, which are great for hacking. The rest of the Omni Body Cyberware seems to be quite terrible for their price, or in the case of the arms and legs, a net negative. What's the design rationale behind the Omni Body Cyberware? So, some of the cyberware that is out there, I mean, doesn't necessarily serve well. Okay, so the Omnitech store in-game is primarily there mechanically to install cyberware for people that you know, you cut off of your enemies or what have you. just to make sure that there's that option if you don't unlock the one on campus and all that stuff. Well, a campus is sort of its whole own separate thing. But so it serves that purpose primarily. But it would be weird if they didn't sell stuff. But Omnitech products in general tend a lot more towards, well, if you have to, there's Omnitech. And that's sort of what's going on there. Like, if as a person in Metroplex, you needed, like, a prosthetic leg, Omnitech does fine. If you want, like, a leg that will make you, you know, badass at Cyber Bowl, or, like, help you out in combat, or any number of other things, less useful. So yeah, it's sort of a crapshoot for that. So yeah, that's more world building stuff. I mean, it's sort of like a lot of the food that you get from restaurants isn't necessarily great. But it's there because it's really weird to have, like, the, like, two items or whatever. Although, that said, there is a restaurant here in town that really just does chicken fingers, fries, and Texas toast. And it's kind of amazing. Not in, like, a actually good food sort of way, but in a, like, wow, this is kind of trashy but amazing sort of way. But yeah, that's where that at. Any hints where I find new high chain earthly stealth techniques? I do love my testicle and I'd like to find more friends for it. That is something that there aren't a ton of those, and there really should be more, and that's on me. Like, there is generally speaking, this is a problem that I've sort of been addressing as over time, that generally speaking, if you look at, like, the chain value versus the number of techniques for it, it's pretty bottom heavy. Not like zero has the most, but, like, you have a lot of, like, threes and fours, quite a few fives and sixes, which, like, that part's kind of good, but there's a very, very few, you know, seven, eights, and nines, and a lot more twos, ones, and zeros. At least two things. I would have to put the zeros. There aren't a lot of zeros or nines, so which one there's more, it's hard to say. But generally speaking, there's a lot more on the low end of things. And that's part of why stuff like the etheric guns content went in. There's a lot of techniques in there to sort of beef out the high end, so to speak. How strong was the Vigilante? What was his secret to surviving the song since all sorts of crazy components? His Type E sidekick Hammer doesn't seem all that tough, yet our very mortal masked buddy could at least survive, if not defeat sewer beings, Yakuza, and sorcerers. Would it be correct to compare him to Officer Stone? Huh, that's an interesting question. He was definitely one of the most dangerous, sort of, like, mundane, so to speak, people in the city at the time of his death. So he's definitely in line with, like, a high-end Midgard security personnel, not, like, their management, who are obviously just managers for the most part. Some of them are promoted from them, but mostly, you know, manager folks. So yeah, this a fairly scary dude. whereas other people, like his sidekick, as it were, are able to lean a bit more on their gifts, as it were. They're going to seem blasé about the player killing their men and working for the families, even as a member of their own. On the other hand, the Fangs in the families are quick to punish betrayal. Does the Eclipse keep the Third Eye super chill, or are they that big that slaughtering their dudes doesn't matter? The Third Eye, I wouldn't say Eclipse keeps them chill exactly, so much as it makes them extremely unpredictable. They're not the kind of people like the families that you don't fuck with because they'll gut you. They're the kind of people that you don't fuck with because you never quite know what they're going to do in response. They might laugh it off. They might gut you. They might, you know, set you on fire. They might pretend that it's okay and then have it really not be okay later. And suddenly, like, there's a hand bursting out of your chest, stealing your ribs or what have you. And it's sort of in the context of the game, obviously they're not terribly unpredictable. Like, you do thing A and thing B results, but that's sort of fun. The sort of thing that they are up to. Is there an actual band or song that inspired Emerald Gift? I mean, in general, I listen to a lot of, like, you know, techno and chill wave and, you know, ambient music. I would say there's a certain amount of, like, Hearts of Space there. I think that's the name of the program. Old, might still be going on, but PBS program with space music and space talking and space. Sorry, cat's yowling again if you can't hear that. They're sort of, a lot of the inspiration for, like, their general approach is sort of the mythos surrounding not the actual writings of Robert Chambers, who got some very explicit references with some of the unearthly items, but his sort of, like, the expansions that have come onto that as his writings get integrated into stuff like Call of Cthulhu, the role-playing game, and Delta Green, which is sort of a modern X-Files approach to the Cthulhu mythos. But Chambers sort of gets carried along by Lovecraft, which is honestly, I think, kind of unfortunate. There's a lot of I like Lovecraft despite the problems inherent with liking Lovecraft, but Chambers, I feel, is a substantially, I feel like he's a substantially better author at the end of the day. Like, his writing is, I mean, just like straight up his prose is way less of a pretentious pain in the ass. And his ideas are both, I would say, like, equally good if not better, but also, and this obviously isn't a slam on either of them, like, the ideas behind his writing, I feel, have become more relevant. There's some stuff in Lovecraft and some of the sort of the pulp stuff of the same era that has, I mean, some of it didn't age well because it's super sexist or racist or whatever, but a lot of it, I mean, even setting all of that aside, didn't age well because the difference in our understanding of our world and our understanding of other worlds and everything sort of around us, our sort of growing scientific knowledge. Lovecraft had some interesting things to say about that, but Chambers was coming at things from a very different angle. That if you, it's the sort of thing where if you're going in as an author and you're like, I'm going to write a new, you know, Lovecraft story, it, I mean, it has, like, you know, new dressings and probably sands off the edges of his sort of personal peccadilloes, but it's fundamentally sort of the same thing. But if you go in and write a Chambers story and just update it to the modern day, rather than it being like, oh yeah, this is, you know, it's like, oh yeah, Necronomicon's on a USB drive now or whatever, it actually ends up saying, I feel, some really interesting things about stuff like media and sort of the omnipresence of that communication, and just sort of the way that art informs culture is a pretty important theme in Chambers' stuff. Like, not in the sense that, like, you'd see it in some, you know, literary fiction type situation, but just, like, the implications of art, people's beliefs, and so forth, are delved into a lot more, rather than Lovecraft, who has a very sort of sterile universe that there's creepy stuff at the edges of. And, like, his stuff hasn't become hugely less relevant. Like, it's, I feel like Lovecraft stuff is kept up a lot better than most of the pulps. But Chambers stuff, I think, actually kind of has improved. Like, it's gained layers of interest and meaning that weren't really intentional. Like, it's not like Jules Verne or something who was actually, like, trying to predict the future and, like, weirdly nails it. But the stuff that he's talking about, the things that he's saying end up being strangely prescient in ways that are not, I feel like, intentional. Which, it's, anyway, Chamber stuff is really cool. But the way that he approaches art and the way that that's sort of been integrated into the broader mythos, particularly in role-playing games, ends up with stuff like Emerald Gift. And that's sort of part of the nugget there. And then, like, you know, Space Music is awesome. Are there any undiscovered hacking encounters right now? Any nudges or winks towards where to find any? Let's see. There are certainly some like hacking results that haven't been found, both in the sense of like the like their items and techniques, or even just like, text for using the right level of functions against a server that haven't really been found. But talking about from a from sort of a code perspective, for me the encounters would be almost like a place you can hack. And I think all of those have been found, because there aren't actually like that many, right? That said, I should go in at some point and add some more of that in Old Town before we dive into Midgard HQ. Are there any skills mutually exclusive with arsonist training or unwavering attention? It'd be a relief to know if I'm disqualified or not from spading other office document skills. I feel like there are some. Let me refresh my memory real quick here. Yeah, I believe there's one that you are gonna be missing out on there. Just there are a few stunning area of effect and double attack techniques, i.e. Dancing Blade and Chemical Mixture, created early on, but there's been nothing like them since. Is this game balance thing? Will we see more stunning area of effect and double attacks? Stunning. Double attacks, I guess, is the easiest one to talk, but that one's just not been something that's really come up a lot. It's still just sort of a tool in the toolbox. Area of effect, I've been there's some dumb stuff about how area of effect attacks work, and it's been kind of like, I really want to fix that, and so every time I go to put in a new one, it's like, I should really go fix that. But then like it's a lot of work to kind of pull it apart. Then I'm like, well, okay, I'll just do something else. It just never gotten to be a priority, but it sort of gets dragged up every time I think about adding a new area of effect, so I've been kind of just avoiding them from that. Stunning is a little trickier. I've been meaning to make sort of open things up with stun resistance a little bit, but that needs some coding on its side too. So is skill 46 gained from an item we've already found or techniques out of? 46. Where are you? That is. Yes. That is from a known item. Actually, I'm not sure if I want to say item or encounter, but that is from a thing that you have run into. But it's pretty hard to get. So tricky. Well, yeah, I guess tricky is fair. There's either brute forcing it would be extremely challenging. But takes a little with a little bit of finesse. It's more doable. Note by finesse there, I didn't actually mean the coding thing. This obviously predates that by quite a bit. Is it currently possible to gain another Tome of Binding Technique from any earthly enemies we know of? Well, that's a good question. I feel like it took a long time to figure out Spider. So there's another one that totally would work, now that I think about it. But as a general thing, the enemies for that would grant that are a pretty tight group. There's a question there that I skipped, which is it possible to learn the solar attendee's letting his wings cut you technique? I feel like there are at least some techniques that I know tied into items that didn't end up getting unlocked for Halloween. There's a few of those in various contexts. Looks pretty doable. So got art and everything. Yeah, no, actually, that one does not fall into the category that I was just talking about. It should be 100% gettable. And is actually not directly related to the solar attendee. It is something that it was an existing technique, actually, when solar attendee was put in. It's like, oh yeah, that works really well. You just got to use it. some questions from Magnifico. Yay, podcast! Thanks for surging free of the winter doldrums to answer Lookdown's 11 billion questions. No, wait, come back! Is Demon Slayer the so hidden it's almost an Easter egg skill, or is that one still waiting to hatch? Yes, that is a so hidden it's almost an Easter egg skill. That is not the only so hidden it's almost an Easter egg skill, but that is definitely one of them. Congratulations, I actually had not realized that that had been found. So whoever found that, a tip of the hat to you, because that one's been hiding out. Either way, we have made some serious progress lately in the field of demon slang. How much cool Matsuo stuff is still out there? There's definitely still a fair bit. I would say maybe, I mean, like, at least one more decent-sized chunk of Matsuo-y goodness. And if folks want more Matsuo, there can be more Matsuo. actually, put in an art request for a bunch of Zaibatsu stuff a couple weeks ago. I don't remember if I had any Matsuo wares in there, but it is entirely possible there will be some more Matsuo stuff coming out there. Is it possible, for those of us who missed the last few Halloweens, to get a Kane right now to chastise upstarts and riffraff, or we need to wait for a highfalutin zone to roll out. No, I'm pretty sure there aren't any Kane drops anywhere right now. But it wouldn't surprise me if one of those showed up, or if I just went back and gave, you know, sewer vagrants and canes or something. Regarding Eye for Bugs, is there any reward for completing your bug display collection other than bragging rights? By itself, no, but there is a, it's sort of part of a process that, that would give you something a little beyond bragging rights. It seems like your personal bug collection ought to interact somewhere with the museum's insect collection. We haven't been able to find anything. Should we look harder? Someone mentioned that, like, right after the bug collection rolled out, and I had literally completely forgot that the museum's insect collection was in there. And I was like, oh, I should totally sneak something in there. And it is too late to be sneaky, but I might go through and... add something, just because it's just weird that doesn't work. That doesn't do anything, right? Are there any avatars that require player coordination collusion, or at least would be much easier to get with it? Thinking maybe a cyberbully avatar might be unlocked by being all cyberbully, finding a PvP opponent that's similarly cyberbully, but with the other team's helmet and technique. I have generally tried to, stay away from ones that require your opponent to do anything, just because that's, I mean, kind of annoying. I don't believe there are any that require your opponent to do anything other than die, or not die, or what have you, you know. So, like, it should pretty much be basic combat functions. But there are a number of avatars still out there, hiding in the ether and non-ether. The random seed samples at seeds easily might still be viable. Is there any way to plant them? Not currently. That very easily might come up. Or rather, there. Yeah. Not sure how much I want to say. Give me a second to properly vagify this. Their current viability, I guess they're. You wouldn't be able to just grow them in your apartment. You'll need to find an appropriate place to grow them, and you might run into one of those later, but it's not there quite. You're not there quite. Are there any entities that we could currently talk to about David's questions that we haven't thought to ask, or to venture into mind-blown meme territory, haven't even found yet? No, I think they've all been asked. All of the ones that are communicative. Although, every time I say something, I'm like, well, there actually is, like, one more that would kind of make sense to talk to. But, yeah, no, I think, and there might be, that's another thing, there might, some more might show up in the future. But it's probably into after the main quest line gets complete territory for various reasons. If you take the Ocean King's path in David's exploration, you can get two skills. One of Blessed of the Seas, Vassal of the Seas, and also Warrior of the Seas. But if you take the King of the Fae path, you can only get one, either Warrior of the Seas or Subterranean Rhythm. Is there another Fae Alliance skill we can get from this quest, or do things bounce out some other way? I feel like there is a missing face skill there. Oops. Was searching in the wrong place and was like, wait, skill number 500, that doesn't seem right. And thankfully for everyone spading things, it was not in fact right. That might actually be it for that path. Yeah, there really should at least be like a mushroom people skill in there. But, you know, as it stands, unless I added it later and still forgot about it, which is certainly a possibility, but there was not one in the initial rollout. There's a long involved chain stretching from bad poetry to the programmatic satire and learning how to banish the horrible poet. In the middle of that chain, there's a spur that branches off and yields vicious poetry. This item seems like a dead end. Doesn't seem to grant any techniques or enable any new choice encounter options. Is there more that we can do with it? There is a shocking amount of bad poetry stuff for reasons that not even I fully comprehend. Yeah, there are a number of different sort of poetry upgrades. Not specifically sure if the vicious poetry might still be a bit of a, well, I don't want to say dead end, but sort of its own vicious poetry might be its own reward. But there's, looks like, four-ish ways to upgrade poetry. So, not 100% sure those have all been found yet. We finally found the big hidden thing the Venom's Angel does. Way back in 2010, you said the finding it will send ripples out for other stuff that's pretty ignored. Does that mean there are other items that silently enhance certain techniques in a way we haven't noticed? Or were you talking more specifically about techniques that leave poison? There are other, at least one other thing, that interacts with that flag. And other items that are sort of related into that. And I think at the time, at the time there might have been a technique that people hadn't fully figured out yet. Stuff like that. But yeah, I was mostly just talking about poisony stuff there. There's a fair number of items that improve different techniques. Most of them are pretty straightforward. And by straightforward, I mean are at least change like the technique text. Back in the day, there were several podcasts where we talked about a big puzzle hall of painting involving cycles. Did we wind up solving that by finding Stellar Appreciation and or Whisper from the Stars, or is the mystery still at large? No, that should be good. There's another half of that that needs to exist at some point, does not currently. And then a third half that is kind of the payoff, to some extent. I mean, there's already some payoff, but some additional payoff. Back in podcast 35 in 2014, you said that we should go back and add another I should go back and add another thing that we can put in the empty injector. Did you ever do that? Did I? I'm literally just going to have to search and see. Oops, those are different kind of injectors. Looks like paint injector is the most recent out of those. You said that skill number 88 is tied to an unearthly item. How many other unfound skills are tied to unearthly items, if any? Most of the unearthly item skills are pretty, like, use the unearthly item, get the skill. like Eye for Bugs, for example. There are, let's see, 101, 102, and 103 all are. Not sure how many of those have been discovered. Oh, 98 is. You should have found. Interesting. I'm not sure if 89 is implemented, but if it is, it was associated with one. 87 should be pretty obvious. 86 is associated with one. It's actually more than I was thinking. 78 is. Should be a pretty obvious one. Okay. So, yeah, rather than going through the entire rest of the list, I think all of the ones before that that are associated have been found, like 71 and things like that. Yeah, the rest are more. Yeah, it apparently started hiding skills and unearthly items later in the game, so to speak. But I think I gave you a list of some. I can't promise that that's complete. That was just sort of the ones I noticed glancing through. Next season, we'll get to vote on which legacy item to bring back to Zach's House of Coins, so that people can make informed choices in their voting. Can we have a rundown on how much of these we still don't know about? Prototype coat. I don't think there are any additional secrets in this hiding in stylish billows, but I've been wrong before. I think that this is not one of those cases. That's been a pretty well-understood one. Emerald Gift Scrapbook. We recently found it looks like the 17th and last form of Channel Inspiration. Is there anything more to find in the Emerald Meditation skill and its derivatives. Don't believe so. Wow, so many forms. And I think that one's been pretty well plumbed. Holosight rifle. This gun can potentially grant a ton of range power and has two techniques, an effect, and a special hologram associated with it. Seems like solid 2 coins worth of content, but is there still more? Third technique. Oh, I should mention while we're going through this that I'm actually getting pretty close to getting the next donation item out. It's basically done. I was just sort of like, Meg mentioned that he was going to ask this question, so I wanted to get the podcast done before I released the item. So that should be out relatively shortly. I think Emerald Gift Scrapbook is pretty well understood. Oh, yeah, I was looking at the Holosight Rifle. I feel like there's one more technique there. But I might be completely full of lies, so I'm looking. Wow, there is still some weird stuff out there, for sure. Yeah. Yeah, there's still some tricksy stuff there. Midgard HGS prototype. Speaking of holograms, there's this bad boy. I can't believe I'm saying this, but I think we might have this one figured out. I think you actually might. It had sort of a lot there, but also kind of, I feel like, did a good job guiding people. I think you've got who. Oh, I think there actually might be a missing thing there still. I wish you could hear the music downstairs. It's actually quite lovely. Well, I'm looking, it's like, okay, there's a thing that nobody's found. Now I need to make 100% sure it's actually associated with this item, or I'll feel terrible. guess it's unrelated. Right. So, yeah, I suppose that's. Now I'm really curious where that's coming from. All right. Well, anyway, so that's I think I feel like there should be feel like oh, okay. No, I think you are done with that one. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. I went down a bit of a rabbit hole about something that is related to holographic stuff in general, but is not that specific item. Shifting Maze wasn't around for this one, so not as in tune with the twists and turns of spading on it. I'm not seeing any big loose ends. Did I we miss something? There's a lot of content with that one, but it's not really. Oh yeah, there's a random poison technique. Hi, poison technique. Yeah, it's not the same sort of like horrible, intricate puzzle that you run into. So I guess actually, as far as spading goes, I would say there is still something related to Hollow Sight Rifle. But other than that, yeah, just go nuts. Grab whatever you're excited about. Moving on to some questions from Gold S. Any hints on skill 37? I think all we know at this point is that it's not part of the Ship of the Damned quest. Let's take a look-see. Seven Oh, 37. I don't believe is gettable at the moment. There's a couple of skills here and there like that. I think that is one of them. But you guys found skill 41, right? I hope, I think. Anyway, that's another one that's unearthly. I was just noticed it looking through. Sorry, I've managed to do something absurd with Firefox here. There we go. Unfucked it. At the start of last Christmas, the many-headed snowman accidentally showed up in the Snow Goons encounter. Were we ever close to unlocking it for real? There's some crazy stuff in here. Eyes. like you should have. Pretty close on that one if it's not. Oh. Oh, a blade into the heart. That's actually super. Okay. So that is the counter that I was looking at to unlock that properly. It's off by 4%. That's super off. I'm sorry. But yeah, you got super close. So I'm confident that with a bit of an extra push next year, that will not be a problem for anybody. For everybody, I should say. Speaking of Christmas, we fought the Abominable Remains only once in Christmas 2010 and the Snow Monstrosity from 2011 on. Would it be possible to get them to alternate or get some sort of choice encounter where people could be able to influence which one shows up? Yeah, I should really either do a third different one or bring in the return of the Abominable Remains, because the Abominable Remains are pretty sweet. There's some good. I like the Freed Snowman a lot. The giant snow, no, I guess massive snowflake fragment just makes me super happy. Sorry, going down a wiki rabbit hole there. Is there any way to learn the crawling mite's evasion technique? Maybe with a mite carapace equipped. There is definitely exists. It has art, so I'm pretty sure that it is accessible. Trick is, of course, figuring out where I might have given it to you. A lot of really obvious places that it should be, and it's not in any of them, which either means that I really screwed up and forgot to have to be granted, or being granted somewhere that not even I can fully comprehend. Live action debugging. apologize as per normal. Okay. Give me 1 second. I'm just actually going to fix this right now because I'm already knee-deep in the dead, as it were. It's entirely possible there are going to be two ways to gain it after I'm done with this. But it should have been gained in what was, to me, the most obvious way. You may or may not agree with my assessment, but looked and it was not there, so that is a problem. And I'm rushing a screen, so I should have done when I got off the air. But there we go. That might still actually not be very easy to get, but it should be doable now. Anything hidden with the church candle? I'm double guessing myself now, but I feel like there is. That's so cool. There's a cool thing. Let me see if search is working. I mentioned in the thread that I was hassling them for that. Hey! Okay. There. Is a thing that is. That it does. There are some cool candle related things yet to be discovered. How about that? Back when the bait worm's image was broken, it was briefly changed to what looked like a computer worm before getting its intended image. Was this computer worm undiscovered cut content from the pre-Novos hacking system? Yes. Yeah, it was. It was. Caught rather than undiscovered, I think. It was going to be part of the virus event, but having, if I'm remembering correctly, having multiple kinds of viruses was just ended up being sort of a pain. So it just stuck with the one the one virus to rule them all. But yeah, that. I might end up coming back at some point, though, because it looks pretty sweet. I think it came out with the, like, little version, but the larger version is enjoyable as well. Some questions from Al. Hi, Kinnick. Hope your February is going better than your January. Woo! It's a trip, that's for sure. It doesn't seem like it could be possible, but you've answered over 2,000 questions about Metroplexity on the podcast. Holy Christ! Wow. I feel a little less bad about being like, wow, I don't remember giving that answer at all now. Thanks for all the vague hints. You are very welcome. Possibly vaguely welcome. Christmas follow-up. Any way to influence if we build tiny or huge snowmen From the hipsters. I believe that that is sort of based off of a communal counter, like it switches over after a while. So nothing that an individual would do would modify that. I mean, other than, advancing it themselves. But yeah, it's sort of a little Halloween-y, I guess. For the Dusty Clipboard Overwatch Hospital Pants, you've said that most remaining undiscovered stuff comes from the interaction between the three items. Is there anything there that needs to be done on the same day? Like if you save the princess today, and something different could happen in the clipboard as opposed to the princess's blossom interacting with something in the clipboard. Yes. There are some of both. Originally, it was very, design-wise, it was very heavy on, like, all same day, all the time. But pulled back on that a little bit, so it's more about the items now. There is still some same day stuff out there, though. I have a feeling there's a lot we're missing from the classic writing desk. Trying various combinations of effects. I still keep getting, it feels too early to work on this. Either that or the wells run dry. I believe only a single time Arcane was able to get a different result, and I did not have any success when I tried to replicate. Any vague hints? Let me take a look at the writing desk. Oh, I mean, that's devious. Okay. Oh, yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on in here. Okay. Yeah, inspiration is a fickle beast. Wow, yeah, there's a lot still buried in there. That might actually be out of the unearthly items I've certainly been looking at this podcast, but like that might be the one with the most like undiscovered stuff out of all of the unearthly items. Don't quote me on that because I haven't looked at all of them super recently. But wow, yeah. So yeah, there is a lot of Wow, I am a monster, I think is the Yeah, no, that's the So yeah, I guess the inspiration is a fickle and ever-changing beast is your vague for that, but oh I just realized another one that may also have a ridiculous amount on discovered. The blanking on the name of it now. The Midgard music player has been a vexing sort of creature. Speculative fiction effect hints that neural bridges are a relatively new advancement in technology. What's the history there? The mean not well they are like the ability to connect obviously things to people's brains is not new, but really like the generalized hooking in of everything to allow for stuff like neural recordings, yeah, has been relatively recent and was finally cracked by a bunch of Zaibatsu scientists, blocked by cracked by a bunch of scientists who worked for Midgard. They would be super legal in Metroplex. But things are sort of get a bit of the push and pull there instead. And once they once you have the sorry, I've totally lost track of what I was thinking of. Moral of the story, all Zaibatsu. Midgard, not big fans. I was, there's always sort of like the backlash to a new form of entertainment, which if anything is even stronger because of the type of new form of entertainment, like neural bridges are kind of scary, like fundamentally. So there's Metroplex is not alone in restricting them a lot, but Zaibatsu are huge fans, particularly stuff like REM timer, white noise type applications. But also, obviously, for pure entertainment's sake as well. Is there a barista skill? Can we hack the latte's personal latte database? You know, that is not the first time it has been asked whether you could hack the latte's database. Not at present, and there is not a barista skill. Although temptation to make a coffee master skill is pretty high. Not I'm not sure if I've talked about this before, but eons ago, when might have been before Puyo even started working at Starbucks, which is her day job, and conveniently will transfer just fine to Seattle. But back when Liz was working there, that's how Liz and Puyo met, and how I eventually met Puyo. Back when Liz was working there, I had a special coffee master course that you could take, and you would learn about all the coffee and like pairings and stuff, and you would have like, it's kind of like almost like a sommelier training, not as intense as like the, you know, the full, there's like tiers of sommeliers, and eventually like it's just ridiculous, but it's not like high level sommelier training, but like, you know, sort of like you're starting out sommelier training. Yeah, and you would eventually get like a certificate, and they had special aprons. Anyway, it was a really cool program, actually, and it deserves to be a skill. Yeah, no, I would. It would take some coding just because I'd have to go through and be like, and tag a bunch of coffees and have them do special stuff. But could be fun. Could be fun. Or, I mean, yeah, just on the barista side, just making making coffee a bit more efficiently, sort of like sushi chef, is not at all out of the question, but is not currently a thing. Let's see. Filled out nearly all the stats in my opponent's stat tail, except for evasion power, because that is a real pain to investigate. Are there any other techniques or methods to check out a foe's evasion power? I feel like there is a technique that compares something like, stealth against their evasion power or something along those lines. The search that I had to do for that was extremely unhelpful. It's coming back with all of the stuff that is negated if you use an evade against it. And so it's just like dozens of things that are like, you know, this is vomiting tar on you. This is grabbing you with tentacles. It's just makes me giggle. That's dope as fuck. Not relevant at all to this question. But dope. Okay. There is at least one technique that you can use for that. I am not sure if you would find that. It's not a common technique, and the comparison is pretty tricky. Now that it looks like two pages, I realize that there's a much better search. There we go. Oh, hey. No, that is not actually helpful. Okay. Yeah, there is currently only one. And it's tricky, but out there. I will keep that in the back of my head as I'm adding more stuff. As I was going through, I was like, oh hey, there's totally this Matsuo thing that would totally not helpful, but it was just like crossed over the earlier conversation nicely. Well, on the Select's communication quest, I can't seem to get any drone antennas from hacking and crashing the delivery drones on the shoreline. Do those interact? That is... it is not intended that those interact. It's really supposed to be going in for the Midgard drones, but there's a certain like degree that would make sense. Let me think about that. But that was not the original intent, but there's a certain charm to it. So I will give that a little bit more thought. Oh. Wow. My brain is definitely running on fumes here. I just wrote for my note to remember to look at that. Stuff plus other stuff. Ah, yeah, there we go. Drone antennas from Blue. Thanks for the cooking update. You are very welcome. What is your favorite breakfast? I have the most, like, static breakfast routine. Every morning, with the exception of, like, the handful of times that we go out to breakfast, but basically every morning for, like, 10 years, maybe? It's been a long time. Actually, yeah, like, about as long as I've been working on Metroplex team, I have had a bowl of oatmeal with some brown sugar, and after, like, 5 years, I started adding walnuts, because I take vitamin D in the morning, and you're supposed to get some fat with it to help you absorb it. And walnuts are delicious, so, you know, it's kind of a bonus either way. Every once in a great while, we'll get some, like, blueberries or raspberries. I'll put those in there. That is also tasty. But yeah, it's pretty much just oats. Every morning. Forever. No cheese omelet? Oh, are you asking why there is no recipe to make a cheese omelet? That is a good question. The actual answer to that is because I do not like omelets. And so... I don't think very... It's like, what do people make omelets out of, anyway? It's sort of the thought process there. It's like, it's the thing that goes on top of omu rice. I mean, sort of, like, actually, it's a moderately different dish. Like, the omelet you put on omu rice is a little different. But yeah, not a big fan. So I had not considered cheese omelets. There seem to be classes of items that are all functionally equivalent. Apples, fish, mushrooms, etc. Do you consider alternative crafting interfaces here? Was it just easier to make each recipe individually? As long as we have recipes, I think that's the easiest way to do it. Twilight Heroes doesn't really have a recipe system. Like, it doesn't display all the recipes you've learned. So for that, when I do sort of the same type of thing over for Twilight Heroes, I'll hard code sets of combinations, like anything from list A, anything from list B, you're golden. But yeah, something like adding a drop down in the recipe or something like that is certainly like technologically feasible, but is something that would take a lot of work to integrate into the recipe system as it stands. Are there no ways of learning opponent IDs and the ultimate forms of technique IDs? Is that just a byproduct of how things are coded? Do you think there will ever be any way to learn those? It would be a spader's dream, even if it were difficult to find. The I tend not to expose information when it isn't sort of needed. And there's some, like, some shenanigans behind the scenes that would expose. Like, there are times where, like, there might be two versions of a technique that look the same but are not actually the same, that sort of thing. It happens a bit more with encounters, typically. But I'm sure I do that a couple times with techniques, too. Showing off what goes on behind the curtains. not always for the best, in that case. And there's some weird stuff that goes on with opponent IDs, too, just because you have, like any sort of enemy that has multiple forms. Those are all different IDs, things like that. But yeah, if something were to come up like that, it would probably be a very sort of fourth wally type of mechanic, which isn't entirely out of the question, but have to be some sort of reason for it. But like, I could see something along the lines of like an age-based mechanic where, like, you know, your techniques do more damage when they're against an opposing technique with a higher number, like a quote newer technique form, and that would be, I mean, honestly, kind of, well, I would find that nightmarish to spade. Maybe that would be awesome. I don't know, but that's probably something in that vein is probably the closest that that I would expect. Just it's sort of like it would end up needing a bit of narrative in there somehow. We've only found four, quote, filler techniques. Are we missing a bunch more? Filler? I'm not sure quite what you mean by filler there. I mean, there's a zillion enemy techniques. But it's obviously not what you're talking about. Yeah, I'm not quite sure about the... I guess I can ask the wiki. Hey, filler techniques. Oh, one's in the middle of the chain. Ah, gotcha. There are not a ton of those. It's sort of a... just there are certain concepts, I guess, that are not just don't come out a ton in the fiction, and that is one of those. Looks like it's not actually one of them. Looks like there are actually five. So there is an missing one. Let's see. Beat down improvisation, swing surprise, and steady shot. And I should mention that the missing one is unearthly, just as a fair warning. Yeah, there's a fifth of those. But yeah, not a lot, just because the narrative doesn't tend to lend itself quite as well as some of the others. Does Poltergeist Stark interact with a pile of secrets or anything else in Old Town or Downtown? It should interact with a pile of secrets. If it doesn't interact with a pile of secrets, I'm pretty sure something is wrong. Which is possible, but yeah, there should be an interaction in the office. But I mean, it only comes up when you run into golems. So, unless you run into other golems in Old Town or Downtown, it shouldn't come up. Judging by demon slaying, right? Why does Matsuo think of robots as demons? Wow, I just came up with a way better answer than the actual answer. So the way better answer is that there's some sort of like Princess Mononoke vibe going on there, with like the, you know, distance between the spiritual and technological realm. And as a side note, what an awesome movie. I should rewatch that movie. Like, it's been way too long since I've seen that movie. That aside, the actual reason is more along the lines of I would have to look at the way it exactly works, but if I remember correctly, it's actually a whitelist instead of a blacklist in programming terms. It's like Matsuo is like, okay, these things are all right. Fuck everything else. And drones fall into the everything else. But I don't think it's unreasonable. I mean, I could have added drones to that list, but very easily. But they're not... They're something that I feel like if Matsuo ran into them, calling them demons or monsters would not be unreasonable. Is there anything special with the annoying headache effect? Can you get it from anywhere other than peacefully traversing the Fang hideout? It makes me suspicious of hidden things. I feel like it doesn't do anything special. But it totally, like, should show up in other places. Man. That update was long enough ago that I... gonna have to check this, but I'm really curious now, because that's one of those things that's like, wow, that buff exists. Oh my goodness, Miss the Ling. Yeah, it really seems to be just sort of its own thing. Going out there, being annoying. Yeah. Yeah, I'm not seeing anything special from that. But it totally should show up more often, because that's just a great buff for expressing my feelings about issues. There are a lot of, like, conversation encounters that should give that buff, in my opinion. The description... Oops, skipping things. Brutality on opposed is known to enhance at least three other techniques. Is there a general class of beating techniques, or is that special to unopposed brutality? So I don't want to say that those sets are completely overlapped. There are some that might just work from brutality. But there is also a general sort of like, yeah, you're beating the shit out of someone, like continuing to beat the shit out of someone, will will give you an added bonus. So yeah, there are. I'm not sure how much that overlaps with the ones you've actually found, but there are definitely some out there that work off of a more general class that Brutality is a part of. The description of the unshielded jump jets from the hammer says, "This used to be part of a cybernetic upgrade, but now it's just a rocket that some crazy person could attach to themselves. Could we craft or acquire that cyberware?" I've actually, was just thinking literally before I got on this podcast that I need to make that repairable, or rather, like, make that be turned back into cyberwearable. Hey, Kinnick, a lot of questions that I've asked have already been covered, but I'm sure I can think of a few more. Oh, sorry, this is from Cryptodynamic. We voted for you to relax and catch up for a bit, but the latest Patreon poll had a number of interesting-sounding things in it. Most of them would probably be spoilers to talk about, but can you share any thoughts about what the pickpocketing skill would be? Pickpocketing skill would be sort of along the lines of phishing, in the sense that there are a number of encounters. Argith, actually, this is on the list of things that Argith has suggested, like, years ago, that he very easily might have forgotten by now, but Argith suggested a long time ago, like, hey, why isn't there a pickpocketing skill? So there's a bunch of encounters where we pickpocket people, and, it would basically be, having a sort of, you know, building up the skill, having, you know, getting more and better items. The higher your skill gets with it in those pickpocket encounters, having it be less likely to, you know, fail and get, you know, beaten up or whatever. And while I was in there, adding probably some more pickpocketing encounters to get the various and sundry rewards in different areas. At the moment, there's sort of like some ad hoc stuff that's going on where, like, some of the encounters you can fail to pickpocket for generally, like, not having a stealth power, which works, but I think a skill would be kind of fun there, so that's why I was on the list. With recipes from Introduction to Baking, are there some particular rules governing which recipes cost energy versus the ones that are free? I do remember having a good reason, and I think it was completely, like, not game balance or anything. Like, it was sort of like, oh yeah, this takes like 10 seconds, and like, oh, this does not take 10 seconds. Just sort of like my gut feeling from baking a bunch of stuff. Which obviously isn't entirely fair, because there are things that I think are zero energy that other people would obviously have different opinions of. But yeah, if I'm remembering correctly, it was just sort of gut feeling. It's come up a few times in the past, but do you think a player character's ability to keep coming back after being killed will have any future interaction or quests, or maybe events? The Fang Boss, Shard, and Saber come to mind for currently existing examples. It actually becomes... will only become more significant. There's a chunk in the downtown quest where it will probably matter quite a bit. And then in the stuff past there, it becomes extremely relevant. Not sure if we're gonna go full Planescape Torment and, like, put you in a situation where you need to kill yourself a bunch of times to get through the puzzle. But it might. Does code on paper require energy use for balance reasons, or is it just a flavor thing to request the process of transcribing the code? That one is... I mean, a little column A, a little column B. It is initially a flavor thing, but it also kind of begins to serve a balance purpose, because it's really, like, you can just sort of give out code on paper without it being a huge deal. because it takes the energy. If it were zero energy, I'd have to be more stingy with it, which, like, would also be fine. Like, it's not a big deal, but, choices like that end up having balanced repercussions at the end of the day. With the new cooking recipes, are there any base ingredients that are brand new items we haven't been able to find yet? Yes. There are, I want to say, three new items that I added with the second wave of cooking. Yes. Yeah. And they're tricky. One of them, I was gonna say one of them is delicious, but they're actually all pretty delicious. Yeah, there are three brand new items, all of which are available sort of within, you know, pre-existing content. Like, it's not like I added a shop in downtown that nobody noticed or something like that. But like one's a drop from an existing enemy. But, you know, it's, you know, certain requirements to get off of it. That sort of thing. So yeah, they're all sort of tied into existing content. And they might take a while to find all of them, but they're all delicious, as I said, to varying extents. I think folks will be happy to have found them when they find them. Any plans for us to be able to kill Maria in the cellar door rather than allying with the ghost? Sounds like she might have some interesting stuff beyond just the ghost skin. Yeah, she totally should be killable. Yes. There. I didn't make her killable yet because there are still some outstanding quests, like little questlet things, that tie into downtown that might require you to kill her. And if they do, I didn't want to, like, make her killable and have people get stuck with a side quest. Stuck, unable to complete a side quest. Like, if you kill her and then talk to people and they're like, oh, well, thanks for killing her, but, like, we're not gonna, you know, pay you, because, like, you obviously did it of your own volition. That's one thing. But, like, having her be killable for a while and then adding that quest feels a little worse, so I didn't make her killable right away for that reason. But yeah, she should have some cool stuff when you can kill her. And there also should be some more hacking stuff on the cellar door as well at some point. But yeah, there's it's not really a spoiler to say that there are a number of factions you can get help from. To sort of take on Midgard HQ. Don't necessarily need them, but it will help a lot. And what, you know, sort of subset of them you decide to help will sort of determine what sort of challenges you're able to bypass, that sort of thing. So yeah, there's sort of like the, you know, you can from the ghosts, you can obviously confirm the families, it also be Third Eye and Yakuza, and I'll be adding those at some point, and then once those are in, then I'll be starting with the actual headquarters itself, which is a beast, and it'll be a number of different zones, so it'll sort of come out in waves, sort of as though if the Slag's Quest had, like, the tower had been built up one floor at a time. Mechanically, it works very differently than that, or at least moderately. But sort of things would get built out that if Lo, Dr. Edmonds, and David and Hell were to play D&D slash Pathfinder, which classes would they pick? Oh, I'm reminded of Bunkers and Badasses, which I should totally play or at least watch at some point. It's a Borderlands 2, maybe, expansion. It's D&D themed, but So, yeah, not really what classes are they, but what classes would they pick? So, Helen would definitely do some sort of bruiser class, like fighter, barbarian, something along those lines. Just smashing face. Has always been kind of a scary lady. She's not intentionally modeled after a friend of mine, but I guess since writing Hell, I've made a friend who could be Hell level scaries if she wasn't, you know, so friendly. Like, internationally rated strength levels, like could utterly, like, has no actual combat training, could still utterly wreck my shit in just like the most embarrassing possible fashion. Not that I have like amazing combat skills or anything, but it would just be like one of those things where it's like, oh, like if someone has like spent their entire life training to be like, you know, like karate or like what have you, and like they would just completely embarrass me, like that's one thing, but just like through sheer difference in like raw attributes, it would be a mess. But anyway, so yeah, any she's really funny because she tends to she's only been in two campaigns so far, but so far she has played two characters that, I guess one of them was a man, one of them was a woman, but both like very much in the same, like the same lane as her in real life, just like dumping everything into strength, like just cleaving the shit out of people, and wrecking face. One of very different personalities, but like characters that like she's very much easily able to drop into. Dr. Amundsen, I feel like would play a face character for the same reason that a lot of people play like wizards. Not sure if I've talked about this before on the podcast, but I have a sort of a deeply held personal belief that in tabletop RPGs, there's a huge divide, even with people who play the same system, in how they handle social encounters, and some people, some groups will make it very out of character skill based. Like, if you can talk pretty as a player, your character is able to convince the NPC. So basically, just acting essentially out of character acting skill. And other groups treat it much more as like a skill test, an in-game skill test, like. You know, roll your d20, add your diplomacy skill. Can you convince the person? And the first group are sort of like the people I tend to hang out with, almost like sort of the circle of like quote serious role players tend to be more on the lines of, oh yeah, like we don't, it's like, we didn't roll for diplomacy because, you know, we're serious about, like, getting, you know, invested into our characters, and, you know, making that into a role decreases the, you know, amount of investment and all this. But I think that there's a really important factor there that gets missed a lot, where people play D&D and Pathfinder. One of the major reasons, possibly even the biggest, is because they want to sort of go into, want to be able to do things that they can't do normally. And a lot of times that's, you know, locking fireballs at people, you know, having access to actual magic. But also you get sort of the interesting sort of, almost want to call it a moral spectrum onto that, where people want to, this is actually really common with people that we play with, because they tend to be kind of our group has sort of been built out of people who know each other through activism. So a lot of them, they really wish that there were simple answers to complex problems. And D&D and Pathfinder are really good at providing that. It's like, oh, you know, there's this, you know, plague sweeping, you know, the city, and the answer isn't like, you know, sanitation and increased, you know, education and, you know, hiring and training more doctors because they don't have enough doctors, and like convincing people to stop doing stupid shit. It's like, bad people started the plague. Go kill the shit out of them. Get the cure from them. Use the cure. And yeah. So anyway, that's its own special sort of, like, kind of, you can call it juvenile wish fulfillment if you want to, but I think it's just sort of normal wish fulfillment, and can be very healthy and cathartic. But the there's a factor there where you want to, if you disregard the mechanical solutions for, like, you know, I talk to the person all pretty like, but I can't do that myself. Like, that's not in my skill set. Let me roll some dice. If you discard that, that means that you're kind of calling that, you know, that dream, that aspiration, that wish fulfillment, sort of void. It's like, you're allowed to wish that you're a wizard. You're allowed to wish that, like, you could ride a dragon and whatever, but, like, wishing that you're socially competent, whoa. So anyway, long tangent. I think Dr. Allenson would probably play a bard, or, like, a charisma-heavy rogue. She's not actually, like, particularly socially awkward, as you can tell from her interactions, but that's the sort of thing that she wishes that she were better at, doesn't think she's particularly good at. So that would be sort of what she's up to with that. David is one of those players who's just kind of would be all about sort of proving how smart he is, like, not necessarily in a bad way, but it could be kind of tiresome. So I most likely wizard, but he's probably the person out of everyone who's the most likely to play as you know, just like, oh, I found this, like, ridiculous fighter build that, like, you know, really just is completely degenerate, and I'm gonna play that and not really think about how that impacts like Hell's enjoyment of the game, because she's playing the other fighter and she's fine, her character's fine, but like it's not ridiculous. Yeah, they would probably give the GM some problems, just sort of dealing with that. It can be kind of headache, but choosing a class definitely wizard, and low, definitely support class. If Amundsen isn't playing a bard, like bard, very good option, but also like cleric. Also is particularly by the time that the time that you meet him in Metroplexity, he's very much open to kind of walking a mile in other people's shoes, and that can, speaking as an atheist, with a sort of pretty stringently or like non-spiritual sort of mindset, playing a cleric can be a really interesting experience from that, and can be like if you get into it, and this is where I get back into like the I agree with the let's role play everything people like 90% of the time. They tend to be kind of my people. But yeah, like that sort of like deep immersive role playing can be very helpful in a lot of ways. And both like it kind of goes in both directions, but it gets to be really obvious when you're talking about like clerics and paladins and stuff for atheists, because it's just sort of like we have one of the players in I'm running a Strange Aeons, which is a Lovecraftian horror game, really kind of with a lot of chambers in there, which is part of the reason. Well, I like Lovecraft, I like chambers. They're two great tastes that go great together. Sadly, we don't have peanut butter yet, so you can't make Buckeyes. But one of our characters for that is a Paladin of Serenre, Serenre is like the goddess of redemption and the sun, and very like not like straight-laced good, but like kind of soul wholesome, your teeth almost hurt good. Like, no, I will not necessarily turn the other cheek, and like they will kill the shit out of people who like are not willing to shape up. Because I mean, it is at the end of the day D&D slash Pathfinder after all. You don't want to have characters that are refusing to enter combat, it just causes problems. But anyway, so it's your character will very much say things like, this person, clearly just needs to see Serenre's light. But the player will, A, sometimes not be able to, like, connect with their character deeply enough at that moment to stifle giggles, which, I mean, is fine. But, because she's non-religious person who's had some like very mixed, we'll say, experiences with religion. Yeah, I think actually mixed is really fair there. She's had some very positive experiences too, but along with you get sort of like she's seen both sides of the coin, and so like, but that sort of embracing of that is can be really interesting for people. So yeah, we've got a. Actually, I think we've got a pretty good group there. We've got probably cleric, bard, a wizard, and fighter. Might be a little short on the frontliners. Like it might work better if Amundsen goes a Charisma Heavy Rogue, you know, flank with Hell, stab people a bunch, but I think they could get through an adventure path. Okay. Well, it looks like we are at the end of our questions, and it's only been a little over 2 hours, which kind of surprises me, but is for the best. So yeah, I'll have some new Patreon questions up in not too long. Crypto mentioned, the last month, everyone really went for the, like, no, seriously, take a month off and chill option, and I'd really, like, put that in there, I don't want to say as a joke, but, like, as a sort of, you know, I mean, just as, like, an afterthought, but, wow, taking some time to myself has been an extremely valuable thing this month, and I really appreciate both you all looking out for me, but also possibly knowing me a little better than I know myself, because I would have definitely tried to do a bunch of stuff, and it wouldn't have gotten done, and I would have just gotten frustrated. So that was an amazing decision, and I really appreciate it a lot, and hopefully I'll be able to pay you back with a bunch of cool stuff next month, but I will not put myself under a ton of extra pressure to do that, because that would defeat the point. I really appreciate that. Yeah, there should be a new Patreon poll coming out, not super long, and also a new unearthly item in probably not tomorrow, but, like, you know, the early part of March. And yeah, that should be pretty cool. It's a one coin item. It's pretty simple. I don't think that it'll make the spade's head explode or anything like that. Spade's heads, definitely with the amount of stuff that you figure out, you have more than one of them. You do not just share one. So thank you all very much for looking out for me, and for playing, for donating, or being a patron, and donating and being a patron. We have some people who are double fisting it, which is amazing beyond words. Thanks for playing and talking about Metroplexity to your friends, and thinking about it when you're not playing it, and trying to figure out the weird shit that I've buried so deep in the game that sometimes I can't even remember it. I think I've talked about this a little bit, but yeah, going forward, we're looking at some more downtown stuff, looking at Third Eye and the Yakuza. The Yakuza stuff will involve some more expansions in the Saibatsu building, beyond just, like, the, you know, cooking supply store. There's actually a number of different shops that are included in that building, and some of those will be expanded upon, so they'll sort of play into the quest. And then you also have the Third Eye, who are, you will actually get to meet some pretty interesting people. We've got some cool stuff coming up. I'm pretty excited about it. Can't promise that I will be, like I said, able to 100% focus, particularly in April, because that's, we're moving across the country. Didn't really talk about that part of it a lot, because there's been so much in the air, but yeah, we're driving from Ohio to the Pacific Ocean. And for those of you who live in another country, or have lived in the same place your entire life, not really had a chance to get out very much, there's a lot of country. The U.S. is really big. It's going to take us a while. But going to stop and see some parks and stuff too. But we can talk about that more some other time. Thanks for listening, and I will see you next time.